we recently talked about that, and we talked about having a championship mindset. Where we are in the process doesn't matter. Our goal will always remain the same. That's to take the division. So that's our bar of success. So that's what we go after. Where we fall from that, you know, that's a learning experience and figuring out why did we not get there or why did we get there. So to me, that stays the same. It's the division. It's the championship. It's the Super Bowl. That's where we aim. That's where our arrow is pointed, and that's where we go. And then when we're done with that, if we fell underneath it, we'll figure out why, what adjustments do we have to make, and we'll go from there.
Welcome back to a Mark Brody Show on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score on Memorial Day. I'm in for Bernstein and Holmes today. And perfectly fitting, because the voice you just heard was that of Bears general manager Ryan Poles, who was recently a guest on the Bernstein and Holmes show, talking about expectations for this season, which I think is a hugely important question, and I can't wait to see the answer once we get through the summer and back into the football season here eventually. And to discuss the Bears further with me here is 9-year NFL veteran Clay Harbor, who is frequently a guest right here on 670 The Score. I've seen him on television on NBC Sports Chicago, and he joins me now right here on The Score. What's going on, Clay? Happy Memorial Day, man.
Not a lot, Mark. I'm great, man. Happy Memorial Day for you, too. Appreciate you having me on, and I'm just glad when you said you saw me on TV, you said NBC Chicago, and you didn't say anything about The Bachelorette. So thank you for that.
I think on one of your first appearances on The Score, I might have opened that up to you. I think I was witness to it or something like that. But,
I remember. And I was like, yeah, man, these guys are like, they said the Bachelorette contested Clay Harbor. I'm like, you can't be 9-year NFL veteran. I was with Gabe, and he's laughing about it.
Hold on a second, though. Hold on. Hold the phone. Do you know how many people would love to be in your shoes to have been a contestant on The Bachelorette, to be able to have those credentials? What I'm trying to figure out here, Clay Harbor, why do you run from it, man?
I mean, they think that it sounds good in theory until you're actually out there. And you have all those feelings flying around, the cameras in your face, and you're trying to date. It's a pretty wild experience, man. I kind of think it's similar to NFL training camp. You know, you're competing for love, you're competing for football. I mean, there's some similarities there for sure.
And you have to, like, drop your inhibitions, and you are at somebody else's mercy, which does sounds like the combine, actually.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. Honestly, like, I don't want to sound dramatic here, you know, and that's one of the taglines, most dramatic season ever, Bachelorette, but, I mean, that's some hard stuff to do, man. These cameras in your faces, you're out there in the show, and it was difficult. It's just so different from, like, what I'm used to, where it's like, yo, go out there and block this defensive end or catch this pass.
Right.
Instead, you are dating in front of hundreds of thousands of people.
Right, like, and literally right in front of you, flesh and blood and cameras and people directing you and telling you what to do. I guess we don't really want to think about that side of it. And I guess that's probably what the producers who put those television shows out are thinking. Let's just make this look like it's all natural and organic and things like that. Well, Clay, I will let you off the hook in terms of any further Bachelorette talk, but I reserve the opportunity to do so in the future.
I appreciate that. Let's talk some Bears.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's talk some Bears, because what we were all really excited about the other day, Clay, watching the one day that we get a glimpse of the OTA one day per week, and there it was, man. We saw Justin Fields connect with DJ Moore. DJ Moore on a famous OTA double move, and he extends to make the catch. And you look at that and you say, and I know that I'm just being, you know, all the hyperbole in the world, But that's what people can start to look forward to. And I think that that is, to me, DJ Moore still the essence of this offseason in terms of the most important player that they have picked up so far.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think obviously the offensive line's big with Darnell Wright and Nate Davis, and be able to move Cody Whitehair back to center and create that competition with Lucas Patrick. Obviously the protection there is big, but DJ Moore is by far and away the most important piece. I mean, just look at the Eagles last year with Jalen Hurts. People are talking about the Eagles are going to draft a quarterback this year because Jalen Hurts can't get it done. Surprise, surprise, you get him a number one receiver, he turns into an MVP candidate. Trevor Lawrence, 12 touchdowns. All he threw was 12 touchdowns his first year, 17, 18 interceptions. All of a sudden you get him Zay Jones, Christian Kirk, Evan Ingram. You get this guy some weapons. Oh, wow. He turns into a quarterback that's in a top 10, top 5 discussions in some people's book. And I mean, you even look at Josh Allen. A lot of comparisons to Justin Fields, and you get him Stephon Diggs. To me, people are so surprised and so down on these players when they don't have weapons to throw the ball to. People don't understand how important that is. At this level, you got to have a good weapon you can rely on. Quick game, a guy you can take 3 steps out, he's going to be there, he's going to catch the football. The intermediate pass game, 5 steps, drop, out. A guy you know is going to get open, not talking bad about the Bears receiver, but a lot of these guys are backup guys. They try hard, they play hard, they're good depth pieces, mm-hmm. but they weren't, aside from Darnell Mooney, players you could count on to get open every play like you can DJ Moore.
Okay, so then the logical question, at least I think, is are the Bears set then? You mentioned correctly that the depth chart was a lot of guys who should not have gotten as much playing time as they should have, like an Equanimeous St. Brown who now could fall into place. But is this now a representative Bears offense in terms of the weapons they have and the guys who are supposed to be catching the football?
Yeah, I think this offense gives Justin Fields a fair shake this year, and really for the first time. I mean, offensive line included there, but I love the signing of Robert Tonyan. I'm a tight end. I love when you have a tight end that you go down the field. You got a guy like Cole Kmet that can catch the ball. He's not going to go out and really get open in one-on-one situations. I love the addition of Robert Tonyan. Helps Kmet stay more in line. Tonyan can split out. He can play outside. He can play slot. Now you can go a lot more 12 personnel and keep the defense off balance. It's a game of matchups, and he's a guy that creates a lot of matchup issues. And I love the draft pick, Tyler Scott. I can't wait to see him in training camp and live to see what kind of juice he's got there. But you get Claypool, you get Mooney, you get DJ Moore. These are 3 guys that you can count on to make plays. You got a big body there. You got some speed there. And now Justin Fields has some guys to really work with, and I think that's going to help him. You'll see him take a big step. I mean, the running back situation, people talk about losing David Montgomery. Yeah, you lost it. I think you got better. David Montgomery was a great player. He worked hard, but David Montgomery got 3 yards in a cloud of dust. I like these other guys. I like Khalil Herbert, who's a home run threat. I like Dante Foreman, who after they traded Christian McCaffrey from the Panthers, guy was ended up with 1,000 yards, averaging 4.7 yards per carry. I like Roschon Johnson. This guy has some juice. In my opinion, he led the nation in missed tackle force percentage last year in the NCAA. This guy can make people miss. This running back room is even better than it was last year.
That's interesting. I hope you're right. And, David Montgomery I wouldn't say mouthing off, but talking about with Detroit about how he, what did he say? Something about he's, we'll play this a little bit later, but how he's now with a winning team and he was just exhausted by the losing and all that. What'd you make of that? I mean, I'm trying to form an opinion on that right now. And part of what I'm thinking is, yeah, he's right. The Bears lost 10 in a row and that sucked. And there was a loser's mentality around the Bears, but it's not like David Montgomery was some superstar with the team either.
Yeah, I feel like Montgomery could have done more for a guy like him. I like Montgomery, but you look at the numbers last year. For some reason, why did Khalil Herbert average 5.7 yards per carry? Same offensive line, David Montgomery averaged 3.5. You can't make that up. You can't explain that away by just saying, oh, maybe he was because Montgomery is more of an early down runner. That's a couple yard difference per rush. You weren't out there doing everything you could have. So in my opinion, I say, you know, you don't talk about the team you just left, especially a fan base that really, really loved Montgomery. And I, you know, I played for the Lions. I have love for Detroit over there. I had a cup of coffee. We made the playoffs in 2016. I remember playing in Seattle and you know, getting beat pretty good there in the wild card round with Stafford back in 2016. Uh-huh. But it's like the Lions have won a ton of games here in the past. Like, yeah, they had a decent year last year, but I mean, throughout the century, I mean, you talk about one of the most losingest franchises in the NFL is probably the Detroit Lions. So you know, I think they still got some work to do, and they're crowning themselves over there in Detroit. So I think they need to just stick to the basics and grind and let the play do the talking.
Yeah, I'm sure David Montgomery was thrilled that the Lions surprised everybody and took a running back in the first round. I'm sure he was thrilled. We'll see how important winning is to David Montgomery, right?
I mean, DeAndre Swift, they trade him and they bring in Gibbs and Montgomery. Did you really improve? You trade away Williams and Swift, and now you bring in Gibbs. You don't know how he's going to be. He's a rookie in Montgomery. So I think they just kind of moved laterally as far as a running back is concerned. And that was an interesting strategy for me looking at the draft. I know they have a lot of weapons on offense, but that defense was the worst yardage defense in the league last year. And I know they drafted Jack Campbell in the first as well, but they got a lot of work to do on that defense.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, they improved it a little bit, and Aiden Hutchinson, I think, is a baller. I think he's for real, but he was for sure. He was a one-man show last year, and they were supposed to. The funny part, I mean, we're really probably going way too deep on the Detroit Lions right now, but you know, people that I talked to before the draft, Clay, they're all saying, oh, defense, and then they took the running back. So it was just that one was wild.
It was really wild.
Yeah. They were over 500 last year.
Yeah.
They didn't make the playoffs, and there seemed to be there's like a legitimacy because here we are naming talented players on the Lions, and that sucks that we're in this position that we have to do that, right? But I want to ask you too. You brought up Robert Tonyan. I want to look at Robert Tonyan v. Cole Kmet, because when we think about Robert Tonyan, you know, Robert Tonyan, he's going into his 6th year, so he's not old. And Cole Komet's in his 4th year, so in other words, he's only 2 years, been in the league 2 years longer, that is Robert Tonyan. Is Robert Tonyan a better tight end than Cole Kmet?
No, I would say all around no. I think Robert Tonyan does some things that are better than what Cole Kmet does, but I think Luke Getsy knows how to use Tonyan. Because you forget, I mean, not you specifically, but I think people forget that Tonyan knows this offense. This is the same offense he ran in Green Bay. It's the same verbiage, the same terminology, because that is what Getsy brought from Green Bay when Tonyan was there. And when he had that big year, with 11 touchdowns and 600 yards and really showed he could be a red zone threat there. And then obviously he had the injury and he came back last year with, 50 plus catches, 500 yards almost receiving. So Tonyan does a lot of good things, but he is a really smooth route runner, catch the football, not a great blocker. Okay. Coming out of college, Tonyan was a quarterback that moved to receiver that in the NFL moved to tight end. So you think about that. This is a smart guy that's got good hands, guy that runs smart, meticulous routes, a guy that can catch the football, find an open spot in zone, but he's not going to move anybody in the blocking game. One of the things I love about Cole Kmet, a lot of the tight ends nowadays, it's like, back in my day, we used to like to block. No, but Cole Kmet is a guy that will stick his face in there and will and can block a defensive end. And that's hard to find in the NFL today, a tight end that can catch the football and block a DN. That's why I'd like to see him get extended, because there's not a lot of guys out there that can do everything you need. And in this zone scheme, as much as the Bears run the ball, you've got to have a tight end that you can run the ball to the strength. And it's a guy like Tonyan, you're going to have to use him as a backside cutoff guy. You can't run the ball to him. You're going to have to run the ball away from him. Cole Kmet, you can run the ball to him. He's a big, strong guy, and he will stick his face in there. And that's why I love Kmet. Good in the play-action football game. I think Justin's going to get better at that, so we can see a big year from Kmet in the receiving game, but also Tonyan is going to be able to be used in some of those situations as well, more receiving than blocking.
That is such a a great point. I hadn't really thought of it in those terms, and that is what you were saying about Cole Kmet, that it's relatively rare when you have a tight end in this NFL who can both catch the football and block, because it's like, you're right, every tight end, it's like, oh yeah, well, what are you working on? Well, I'm trying to get better as a blocker. But secretly they don't really care, because they're the really good ones are getting 600 to 1,000 yards receiving, right? So the expectations from the coaches aren't even that high, or am I wrong on that one?
No, you're right. These guys are getting paid to catch the ball, and I mean, it just works for them, because when you come down to contract negotiations, typically how it works, if you're the number one tight end, are you a playmaker? You get paid more if you're a playmaker. But if you have a guy that I played with, that I respected, I think you might have heard of him, I'm not sure. His name was Rob Gronkowski. Okay, this guy could have played offensive tackle in the NFL. He was that good of a blocker. And that's what, to me, why I think Gronk is the greatest tight end of all time, above Travis Kelce. I love Travis Kelce. Think he's incredible. But Gronk could just do things I've never seen a tight end do. And Kmet has some of those traits. He can block like that. He's big. This dude, Cole Kmet, when I remember being on the field last year at training camp, I'm 6'3 and some change. Uh-huh. I go, who is this? Is Cole Kmet? This guy is this big?
Yeah, he's huge.
Foot six, 260 pounds. Yeah. This is a massive human we're talking about here. And this guy can do everything. It's not often a tight end can do it all like him.
Well, and one thing I like about Cole Kmet, too, and you've alluded to it just in the context of your answer, he's big and he's not afraid to use his size. Like he likes to, and sometimes it's not good, but he likes to plow. He likes to not go down. He's not afraid of contact. So he plays big, too, doesn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. And I know I'm not saying he is Gronk, but he has some traits that when I'm watching this guy, I think, wow, that's some things that remind me of a guy like Gronk, a guy that I played with. And I played with Martellus Bennett. Martellus Bennett was the same way. He's a big guy. Uh-huh. He would stick his face in there, and obviously he needed to be more consistent when he did it. But great player. And I think Kmet's just as good as Martellus Bennett and can be even better because he has those traits. And people forget, he's still only 24 years old, too. He came in the league, I think he had just turned 21. This is a young guy that's going to continue to improve, continue to get better, and he has some special traits. When I look at tight ends, I played tight end for 9 years. I played with Eric Ebron, Rob Gronkowski, Martellus Bennett, Brent Celek, Zach Ertz. I've seen a lot of guys, and Kmet is special because he can do a lot of things that even some of those guys I just named couldn't do. And I think he's going to have a big year this year because of that.
Wow, this is one of the more heartening conversations I've had about him, Cole Kmet, since probably his rookie year. So, I mean, I love the Martellus Bennett. Like, if you think he's better than Martellus Bennett, I know Martellus Bennett kind of crashed and burned eventually, but that guy, if he would have, and I mean this not even jokingly, it seems like if he would have loved football more, Martellus Bennett could have been special, because that guy had some great years. He was so good. I mean, even with the Bears, he was really good.
Insane athlete in size and speed and just being able to play with Marty, unbelievable guy. And, I agree with you. I think he probably could have been better if he was more focused on just football. But, I mean, he's one of those guys that, I mean, he was just a special dude. He had so many things going on. He's writing, kids' books. He's doing TED Talks.
Sure.
I feel like maybe he wasn't just specifically a football player, as a lot of the greats are. And I think that's one thing that maybe could have set him apart was, like you alluded to, maybe he didn't have the love specifically for football like a lot of the other guys. But I really do think Kmet can still have a big year. I would extend him before he does. Because like I said, you get Dallas Goedert's a solid blocker. George Kittle's pretty good. Uh-huh. I mean, besides that, the top tier of tight ends, you're not seeing a lot of guys that are really taking on defensive ends and holding them up in the run game. That's why the Bears run game is so good. That's the reason.
I think we have done a good job here. I mean, you probably have talked about this kind of stuff before, but just sort of denting the myths of football in that, like the fact that we, and I guess it's fine if we criticize a tight end's ability to block or praise it, but it's just, it's I don't know if it's either lost art or if it's just something that is not focused on, or to your point earlier, these guys are paid to catch the football, period.
Absolutely. Like, okay, so we talked about Tonyan. Love Tonyan as receiver. Tonyan was a quarterback. Then he moved to wide receiver, and now he's a tight end. He's just not going to be able to do the same things that a guy like Komet can do that played Notre Dame at tight end for 3 years. Firstly, he doesn't have the reps. And secondly, I mean, a lot of times it's just a mentality. It's something you really got to – I mean, for me, I was a guy that had to block. You know, that's how I stuck around the league. But a guy like Komet, who does both things, is going to be extremely valuable because, you know, as much if Tonyan has more yards than Komet this year, Komet's still valuable because I'm sure he will play a much bigger part in the run game. And it's difficult to do a tight end to block a defensive end. These guys are bigger than you. They're more athletic. There's a reason these offensive tackles have to weigh 320 pounds. That's because these defensive ends are massive and strong. A guy like Komet holding up in line is special, and I just hope that the Bears fans realize it's not easy. And to find a guy that can do that, play in and play out, and that gives as much effort as he does. He's blocking hard every single play.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I always look for. And this guy's blocking hard, blocking well, sticking his face in there. So I see a big year for him coming.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly what Ryan Poles is seeing in him too, and that's why he, you know, circled him at the end of the year last year, saying that this is one of the success stories on this team. So based on everything you're saying, that's a pretty good endorsement for Cole Kmet, and hopefully the Bears will eventually get something done with him. That was a great nuance in that conversation. Last thing I want to ask you though, Clay Harbor, is the comment coming in from Ryan Poles. He had been asked about what are reasonable expectations for this team, and he gave the politically correct answer, which was it's always to win the division. But you know, backstage they probably have a different expectation that nobody's ever going to know and nobody's ever going to see, and maybe they just communicate it through logic, like, look, we know what we got, we know what we don't got. So let me ask you, with the improvements that you have seen, many of which you have outlined for us here in this segment, what should logical expectations be for the Chicago Bears next season?
You know, I correlate this offseason with the offseason that the Jacksonville Jaguars had last year. Obviously, you bring in Christian Kirk, a big receiver. You bring in Zay Jones. The Bears brought in Chase Claypool last year. You had the number one draft pick. The Jaguars had the number one pick. The Bears had the number one pick. You improved. You brought in an offensive lineman with the Jaguars with Brandon Sheriff. Here with the Bears, you bring in an offensive lineman like Nate Davis that has played. So I think there's a lot of correlations there. You put the weapons around Trevor Lawrence, who is coming off of a slow year. Now you put some weapons around Justin Fields. I don't see why everybody thinks that this is a team that can't turn this thing around and do what the Jaguars did and win the division. I'm not saying I'm counting on that. I'm saying it's possible. It's not every year you have the most salary cap space and the number one pick. If you're a normal team and you're, you know, maybe you got the 10th pick and you got a middle of the tier salary cap, you can't make that many moves. This is an uncommon year. The Bears have done so much this season. This is a completely different team. Everybody's been talking about it. They still need to add some D-line help, you know, at nauseam, Yannick Ngakoue, Frank Clark, maybe Leonard Floyd, all this D-linemen. But I really do think if you bring in a couple pass rushers, not just one, you probably need two, that this team can compete for the division. You look at the division, Jordan Love is gone. I'm not in love with him. I don't know who he's going to. Aaron Rodgers isn't there anymore. Detroit, they look good, but still, this was the worst yardage defense in the NFL last year.
Yeah.
I'm not ready to crown him. Kirk Cousins? The Vikings had 13 wins, but they had a negative 19-point differential. They should have been a 500 team.
Oh, yeah, and they came down to earth in the playoffs based on what you just said, that's for sure.
Against an average Giants team,
yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, a team that I thought was fake too, really. Great stuff, man. Last thing is, if the Bachelorette wanted you to come on for a reunion show, would you just be like straight up, no, I've moved on, I'm doing different things with my life now?
Yeah, I'm retired from football, and I'm retired from the bachelorette, Mark.
Okay.
Maybe if they called me and they're like, yo, you know, we want you to be the bachelor and, you know, and do that, you know, I have to consider that. That could be
okay.
fun. So maybe
yeah.
we'll start that campaign. But,
all right.
You know, I'm retired from the bachelor world.
Okay. So you're not ruling out the bachelor. I'm going to leave it at that, Clay Harbor. Thank you so much for coming on, man. Great stuff. I appreciate you, and have a great rest of your holiday.
Thanks, Mark. You too, man.
All right, man. That is Clay Harbor. That was really good. As the texter from the 847 says right at the top here, this is a great segment with some new Bears takes ready for the NFL season. I just have not heard that clear of an endorsement for Cole Kmet for a while. And I think in his first year and a half or so, or maybe even 2 years, there was so much hope for him. And he wasn't getting the playing time, playing behind Jimmy Graham. Oh, my God. And for Matt Nagy. I mean, those things have to be added in. And it's just sort of like he's been on the rise, but the idea that he has some extraordinary ceiling had seemingly lowered. And Clay Harbor, go back and listen in this 11 o'clock segment, like really laying it out for Cole Kmet and enlightening all of us on the idea that there ain't a lot of good blockers, tight end-wise, of value in the NFL. That the guys that you want on your team are the guys who can catch the football, no matter what you think, no matter what you say, no matter what you see on the field. Because we all do, and it's easy picking. Well, he can't block. You know what I mean? Like, unfortunately, that kind of mentality is not hammered in as much as maybe it once was. And you could even say that for, like, when it comes to the running backs and Khalil Herbert, and not a great blocker, but the best running back on this team probably. Ooh, did I say that? Is he the best? Is it Roschon Johnson? Is Roschon Johnson the best running back on this team? Ooh, Dante Foreman? Travis Homer? Anybody? Travis Homer? No, not Travis Homer. But anyway, I do have to take a break. I'm well late for that. When we come back, there's just some really good text messages that have been coming in today from all sports. A lot of good stuff from our baseball conversation earlier. A lot of people critical of David Ross, for sure, so we can get back into some of that as well. And at noon, we'll go to Wrigley Field, where Cubs writer for Marquee Sports Network will be Andy Martinez, to talk about the Cubs and the Rays and all that has been going on with the Cubs. I'm Mark Grody. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Let's get back to more Mark Grody on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
I've been collecting your text messages today just from various reactions to topics that I've been discussing today on a Mark Grody show on Memorial Day, and I hope your day is going splendidly so far. I have not been outside yet, but I will be soon and doing all the things that you're probably doing today. But the text lines are open. 312-644-6767 is the number. We start. I'm just going to read through these, a little bit of comment, but mostly just read. LOL, who gives a bleep how to pronounce his name? His ERA is 8. And that makes me laugh because I was talking about Jameson Taillon earlier. Jameson Taillon, who has been bad for the Cubs, and his name is pronounced Jameson Taillon. But 50% of the people say Taillon, and I just don't understand. I don't get it. So his name is Jameson Taillon, but he is referred to as Jameson Taillon a lot of the time. Maybe it's a Chicago thing. Taillon. It's Taillon, but it is Taillon. But that's a good touche to the texter. Another text. We love Grandpa Rossi, but he is a lousy manager. A few texts like that. MG, Derek nailed it. Ross doesn't deserve excuses, but he certainly needs them. So a lot of people frustrated with David Ross. I said earlier and continued to contend that this is still a Jed Hoyer team. Cubs are in a rebuild. Managers don't have a whole lot of say in what goes on during a rebuild. Eventually, more of that power will be usurped once things are smoothly running, if it gets to that point. Because, yeah, Jed Hoyer's on the clock, too. No excuses. But I do think that David Ross, because A, his bullpen sucks, and you know it. Come on. You look at the Cubs roster, you look at this team, and while they were and have been mostly fun to watch this season, you know what this is. And this is not a year that the Cubs are expecting to win the World Series. It's just not. I mean, there was enough holes at the beginning of the season to look at that and say, who's your starters in the playoffs? And who is it? It's not Tyone. Is Kyle Hendricks? I mean, just one game back, and it wasn't great, but whatever. We'll give Kyle Hendricks time. Drew Smyly? I don't know, although he's been okay. Dustin Steele? Yes. Marcus Stroman? Yes. But when you still have games where, you know, Miles Mastroboni is playing and, you know, Mike Kauffman and, you know, a lot of these guys who are not going to be around when the Cubs are winning games again someday. But, yeah, so I'm more like the focus has to be on Jed Hoyer more than it has to be on David Ross. Guess I commented a little bit further than I had intended. But hi, Mark. Why do you say happy Memorial Day? People lost their lives in wars. Good question. That's a good point. Yeah, it's not a happy. It's what is it? It's I hope your Memorial Day is going well. How about that? Compare the Reds roster and individual stats with both Chicago teams. Definitely better than the White Sox and on par with the Cubs. I asked the question to open the show today. Are the Reds good? I mean, because that's what I got to thinking about yesterday as I'm watching the game. I'm like, it's not like I'm not asking myself, are the Cubs bad? Because I don't think the Cubs are bad. But the question I was asking is, for the sake of the Cubs in the division, is, are the Reds good? The answer that I came up with is, no, not really. You know, their rotation is struggling. They don't play good defense. They don't hit for power right now. They don't hit for average. So it's really not a good outfit. And I don't know that Ellie De La Cruz, when he comes up, solves every single problem with the Cincinnati Reds. So that text was in conjunction too. Long time no talk. Oh, this is unbelievable, this text. This is great. This is from a celebrity, actually. Hello, Mark. Gary Pressey here. Gary Pressey, the former Cubs organist. Sitting back and enjoying your conversations, retirement, taking care of my 98-year-old mom, and watching the Honeymooners. That's my guy. Oh, I'm so glad to hear. Cheers to your mom, Gary Pressey. I hope that she is doing well. Sounds like she is doing well. 98 years young. God bless her. He goes on to write, long time no talk. Had fun when you were covering the Cubs and enjoying retirement. Well, Gary. Yeah, Gary and I, we both shared an affection for the Honeymooners. So when he'd see me down on the field, when I'd be doing pregame stuff, he would start playing Honeymooner stuff. So that was Gary Pressey. What a joy to hear from the Cubs' former organist, Gary Pressey, on a Memorial Day. Mark, thanks for being on during the holidays. It's very simple. It's too complicated. Everybody's making it's very simple. We need a lights out starter and a lights out reliever. Oh, everybody needs that. Then he's talking about that as it pertains to the Cubs. Yeah, they don't really have that. I mean, Marcus Stroman has been very good, and Stroman has a very tough task ahead of him to pitch to the Tampa Bay Rays. Shane McClanahan throwing back. 12:45 is when we will bring you Cubs baseball right here on the Score. If we have time, I will do another text segment a little bit later on. But we need to take a break. Coming up at the top of the hour, we go to Wrigley Field and talk Cubs. I'm Mark Grody here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
LeBron will be the greatest statistical guy to ever play the game of basketball. And there's no comparison to him. None. So, does that make him the greatest player to ever play the game? I'll leave that out for debating because I don't believe that there's a great player because our game is a team game and one player can't do it. Like, I seen Michael Jordan play before I came to play with the Bulls. You guys seen him play. He's a horrible player. He was horrible to play with. He was all one-on-one. He's shooting bad shots. And all of a sudden, we become a team and we start winning. Everybody forgot who he was.
Hey, is anybody asking Scottie Pippen this question? And this question would be, are you serious? Are you just like, does anybody call them like, are you kidding around? Are you trolling? You're not serious, right? You're just having fun, right? You're just embittered and you're trying to debunk something that's undebunkable. Oh, Scottie Pippen. Scottie Pippen, Scottie Pippen. That's on the Gimme the Hot Sauce podcast with Stacey King and Mark Schanowski. Yeah, our guy, Scottie Pippen. I'm Mark Rohde. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. And actually, what are you saying right there is, I mean, it's kind of true. He just didn't put it correctly, or he headlined it unnecessarily. Of course, who cares? Honestly, oh, I just went Schuster there, didn't I? Who cares? I don't care that LeBron James will have been the greatest statistical basketball player of all time. We don't think about basketball really in terms of that. That's fine. Like, if that's your argument, okay. Stats are what it is, then LeBron James is the greatest basketball player of all time. So there's that. And then there is the MJ being bad before Pippen came along and calling him a horrible player before he came along. I mean, a little bit of that. What's true about Michael Jordan then is that he wasn't really interested in being a team player at that time. And some of it was probably the teammates with whom he was working. I mean, is Quentin Daly high tonight, or is he available? What's going on? Who am I throwing to here right now? So, and I always say, like, some of my favorite Michael Jordan to watch was before the cavalry came in, because then it was just watching this explosive athlete do things, and you kind of cared about the score, but you're more interested in seeing Jordan school guys on the baselines pre-90s, which he would just do. And then the sheer volume of reverses from Michael Jordan in just like your average Wednesday game against the Detroit Pistons or the Atlanta Hawks or the Cleveland Cavaliers. That was always something to behold. But, yeah, Pippen just putting it incorrectly in that regard. If he wants to talk about how he had to learn to become a team player, that's absolutely fine. Let's pick through a couple more of these Scottie Pippen cuts, and I'll give you my opinions. This one right here, the success of the Bulls came from the team and not Jordan. Here is Pippen again.
I'll put it like this. Of all my years I played in Chicago and played with Michael, I never saw one free agent come to the Bulls and said that they want to play there with Michael. I do recall a couple of them coming there during the offseason when he retired, or the 2 years that he was away from the game. So I say that to say this. The success of the Bulls came from a team. It didn't come from Michael Jordan. It didn't come from him being critical of other players. If anything, that discouraged players, because no player wants to be talked down to, belittled, or even made fun of to some way. And I felt like those were a lot of things that were brought out in a documentary. You couldn't change how he spoke to his teammate. It was on video. You couldn't change how he criticized his teammates. It's on video. So to look at his character as a player, none of that was driving us into winning.
Scottie Pippen right there again. Sounds like guys were, I don't know if I want guys that are afraid to play with Michael Jordan to play with Michael Jordan. So that's what I would say about those guys. And quite frankly, I mean, Pippen might have been right. Maybe guys were afraid to play with Jordan. He didn't say afraid. I'm saying afraid. But nobody's really wanted to come here since Jordan either. That's part of the problem. You know what this whole thing really is, though? And I got more cuts, and we could play these all day, and I'm sure that you've heard them. The real bottom line here with this stuff with Scottie Pippen for somebody like me who was, you know, raised on the 90s Bulls and was a fan of it, you know, just like a lot of you listening right now, like you revolved your social lives around it, and it was just everything, like the summers were just great in the 90s because of the Bulls. It's heartbreaking, like honestly, from a sports perspective, when you hear Scottie Pippen doing whatever he is doing, the, you know, feeling like he was disrespected. I'm sure some of that's true. I just feel like Scottie's gone about it the wrong way. Like, again, attempting to debunk the Michael Jordan myths, that's an undebunkable thing. I mean, six titles and, you know, mind-blowing moments from Jordan. So he's embittered, and maybe he deserves to be, but he's just going about it all in the wrong way. And it's just, yeah, you know, it's something that, you know, you hold. It'd be like down the road to a different degree, like in 25 years right now. Like if you ain't relating to what I'm saying and you need a better, more modern example, it'd be like somewhere down the road, like Chris Bryant starts snapping at Anthony Rizzo and they're not buddies, or, you know, just something like that, where it's sort of like from a sports fan perspective, it kind of breaks your heart, you know, all in perspective. And it's not the biggest deal in the world, but I think there is such thing as sports heartbreak. And quite frankly, it breaks my heart to see the boys fighting like this. Scottie Pippen just won't go away. He just keeps coming back up with more stuff. So Scottie Pippen, I will say that Scottie Pippen is available. He is available, and he will talk. He will not allow this whole thing to be a 24-hour segment. No, sir. No. I mean, just kind of talking about the same things we talked about the last time Scottie Pippen mouthed off. But it is heartbreaking. One more cut from Scottie Pippen. Here he is talking about Phil Jackson, the head coach of the Bulls.
You know, he just really turned sour to me his last couple years of coaching. Not that that took anything away from me as a player or how I played the game or anything, but it was more, he became selfish. And when you're around selfish people, then things just, it really was the breakup of our team, to be honest. You know, one selfish guy on the team, another selfish guy coaching the team. It was time for a divorce.
Yeah, and maybe that's true. Maybe that one is true. Maybe it was time. And I don't doubt that MJ had a selfish streak. I don't doubt that Phil Jackson had a selfish streak. Again, I'm just trying to figure out where Scottie Pippen is going with all of this. What's the end game? What will make you happy, Scottie? What can we do? Can we give you money? But no, I just really think it's a friend. Dude, what is going on? Are you serious about this stuff? And he's doing another round of this stuff. So obviously, maybe he'll have a sequel to his book coming out next year. What if this is just what we get now? Every year, Scottie Pippen rips on the 90s Bulls, his lifelong attempt to debunk the greatness of Michael Jordan and the six title-winning Chicago Bulls. When we return, let's talk about the Chicago Cubs, who could use a victory today. They play Tampa Bay today, 12:45 pregame here on The Score. And coming up next, we'll go live to Wrigley Field and talk to Andy Martinez, who writes for Marquee Sports Network. I'm Mark Grody, and this is Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
LeBron will be the greatest statistical guy to ever play the game of basketball. And there's no comparison to him. None. So, does that make him the greatest player to ever play the game? I'll leave that out for debating, because I don't believe that there's a great player, because our game is a team game, and one player can't do it. Like, I seen Michael Jordan play before I came to play with the Bulls. You guys seen him play. He's a horrible player. He was horrible to play with. He was all one-on-one. He's shooting bad shots. And all of a sudden, we become a team and we start winning, everybody forgot who he was.
Hey, is anybody asking Scottie Pippen this question? And this question would be, are you serious? Are you just like, has anybody called him? Like, are you kidding around? Are you trolling? You're not serious, right? You're just having fun, right? You're just embittered and you're trying to debunk something that's undebunkable. Oh, Scottie Pippen. Scottie Pippen, Scottie Pippen. That's on the Gimme the Hot Sauce podcast with Stacey King and Mark Schanowski. Yeah, our guy, Scottie Pippen. I'm Mark Rohde. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. And actually, what are you saying right there is, I mean, it's kind of true. He just didn't put it correctly, or he headlined it unnecessarily. Of course, who cares? Honestly, oh, I just went Schuster there, didn't I? Who cares? I don't care that LeBron James will have been the greatest statistical basketball player of all time. We don't think about basketball really in terms of that. That's fine. Like, if that's your argument, okay. Stats are what it is, then LeBron James is the greatest basketball player of all time. So there's that. And then there is the MJ being bad before Pippen came along and calling him a horrible player before he came along. I mean, a little bit of that. What's true about Michael Jordan then is that he wasn't really interested in being a team player at that time. And some of it was probably the teammates with whom he was working. I mean, is Quentin Daly high tonight, or is he available? What's going on? Who am I throwing to here right now? So, and I always say, like, some of my favorite Michael Jordan to watch was before the cavalry came in, because then it was just watching this explosive athlete do things, and you kind of cared about the score, but you're more interested in seeing Jordan school guys on the baselines pre-90s, which he would just do. And then the sheer volume of reverses from Michael Jordan in just like your average Wednesday game against the Detroit Pistons or the Atlanta Hawks or the Cleveland Cavaliers. That was always something to behold. But, yeah, Pippen just putting it incorrectly in that regard. If he wants to talk about how he had to learn to become a team player, that's absolutely fine. Let's pick through a couple more of these Scottie Pippen cuts, and I'll give you my opinions. This one right here, the success of the Bulls came from the team and not Jordan. Here is Pippen again.
I'll put it like this. Of all my years I played in Chicago and played with Michael, I never saw one free agent come to the Bulls and said that they want to play there with Michael. I do recall a couple of them coming there during the offseason when he retired, or the 2 years that he was away from the game. So I say that to say this. The success of the Bulls came from a team. It didn't come from Michael Jordan. It didn't come from him being critical of other players. If anything, that discouraged players, because no player wants to be talked down to, belittled, or even made fun of to some way. And I felt like those were a lot of things that were brought out in that documentary. You couldn't change how he spoke to his teammate. It was on video. You couldn't change how he criticized his teammates. It's on video. So to look at his character as a player, none of that was driving us into winning.
Scottie Pippen right there again. Sounds like guys were, I don't know if I want guys that are afraid to play with Michael Jordan to play with Michael Jordan. So that's what I would say about those guys. And quite frankly, I mean, Pippen might have been right. Maybe guys were afraid to play with Jordan. He didn't say afraid. I'm saying afraid. But nobody's really wanted to come here since Jordan either. That's part of the problem. You know what this whole thing really is, though? And I got more cuts, and we could play these all day, and I'm sure that you've heard them. The real bottom line here with this stuff with Scottie Pippen, for somebody like me who was, you know, raised on the 90s Bulls and was a fan of it, you know, just like a lot of you listening right now, like you revolved your social lives around it, and it was just everything, like the summers were just great in the 90s because of the Bulls. It's heartbreaking, like honestly, from a sports perspective, when you hear Scottie Pippen doing whatever he is doing, the, you know, feeling like he was disrespected. I'm sure some of that's true. I just feel like Scottie's gone about it the wrong way. Like, again, attempting to debunk the Michael Jordan myths, that's an undebunkable thing. I mean, six titles and, you know, mind-blowing moments from Jordan. So he's embittered, and maybe he deserves to be, but he's just going about it all in the wrong way. And it's just, yeah, you know, it's something that, you know, you hold. It'd be like down the road to a different degree, like in 25 years right now. Like if you ain't relating to what I'm saying and you need a better, more modern example, it'd be like somewhere down the road, like Chris Bryant starts snapping at Anthony Rizzo and they're not buddies, or, you know, just something like that, where it's sort of like from a sports fan perspective, it kind of breaks your heart, you know, all in perspective. And it's not the biggest deal in the world, but I think there is such thing as sports heartbreak. And quite frankly, it breaks my heart to see the boys fighting like this. Scottie Pippen, he just won't go away. He just keeps coming back up with more stuff. So Scottie Pippen, I will say that Scottie Pippen is available. He is available, and he will talk. He will not allow this whole thing to be a 24-hour segment. No, sir. No. I mean, just kind of talking about the same things we talked about the last time Scottie Pippen mouthed off. But it is heartbreaking. One more cut from Scottie Pippen. Here he is talking about Phil Jackson, the head coach of the Bulls.
You know, he just really turned sour to me his last couple of years of coaching. Not that that took anything away from me as a player or how I played the game or anything, but it was more, he became selfish. And when you're around selfish people, then things just, it really was the breakup of our team, to be honest. You know, one selfish guy on the team, another selfish guy coaching the team. It was time for a divorce.
Yeah, and maybe that's true. Maybe that one is true. Maybe it was time. And I don't doubt that MJ had a selfish streak. I don't doubt that Phil Jackson had a selfish streak. Again, I'm just trying to figure out where Scottie Pippen is going with all of this. What's the end game? What will make you happy, Scotty? What can we do? Can we give you money? But no, I just really think it's a friend. Dude, what is going on? Are you serious about this stuff? And he's doing another round of this stuff. So obviously, maybe he'll have a sequel to his book coming out next year. What if this is just what we get now? Every year, Scottie Pippen rips on the 90s Bulls, his lifelong attempt to debunk the greatness of Michael Jordan and the six title-winning Chicago Bulls. When we return, let's talk about the Chicago Cubs, who could use a victory today. They play Tampa Bay today, 12:45 pregame here on The Score. And coming up next, we'll go live to Wrigley Field and talk to Andy Martinez, who writes for Marquee Sports Network. I'm Mark Grody, and this is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.